Live from the heart of the universe, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guest, founder of Communication with All Life University, Joan Riquette.
Night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Emil Spiceman Board. I am Mark Leger, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Years ago, I used to do something funny with my nieces and nephews and Mark's son and a bunch of my friends' kids, where they'd ask me a question, and if I didn't know the answer, I would pretend like I was talking into my phone. Now, they were familiar with Google, but they thought I had this special something or other that I could just talk to Google and it understood me. And I'd say things like, do you remember the time that I did this? And I'd go on and on and on. And then they'd get it, like, I don't know what I'm doing and Google's not going to answer my question. And they'd laugh. And then they started doing it too. And it became this funny thing. Well, now with AI, I just did that with my phone because I was trying to find a video because I saw a video on Instagram and I really liked it and I didn't save it. And I thought, how do I find this? So I went on and I pretty much did that. And I said, there was this video and there were dogs and it found it. And so now the joke doesn't work anymore. So I'll have to think of funnier things to do. But in the meantime, I found the video I was looking for today because of that. And the video was watching, and I was hoping it's a real place, and I was hoping this really happens because I'm hoping that more of this happens. I got kind of emotional watching it as these dogs were let out, I think one by one, into a room where people were sitting. In some cases, people were sitting in a circle. In some cases, they were big rooms with lots and lots of people just sitting in rows at a seat, some with their heads down and some with their eyes closed, what have you. And the dogs would be let out, and the dogs would, quote unquote, find their human. And that was, I'm assuming, an adoption center. The video I found was, one of them I found was Fur Friends Club One, the number one on Instagram. But there were several of them, and I just found them just before the show. And the videos were amazing to me in that in some cases it looked like the dogs had just entered the room. And in a room full of people, they go up to one person. And in some cases, like, they go up to the back of the chair. Like, they didn't see the person. They know, they feel something. They connect with something. In one case, there was a woman who was obviously pregnant, and the dog went up to her belly. So I'm wondering if the dog was choosing the woman or the baby. In one case, it looked like mother and child sitting together, and the dog definitely went up to the child. And so it raised a lot of questions for me at the time, asking, like, what are they sensing? What are they connecting to? And to watch these dogs, like, sink in to hugs, as if they'd done this already 1,000 times, there's something definitely going on. And so I can't wait for this conversation with our guest today because I know the answers are here and she's going to help us with that for sure.
She's going to help us, and I'm so excited that we're having this conversation tonight and that we get to expand on, having touched on it a few times over many years. I have a friend that wrote a book about a little dog and an experience that he had with that little dog, which involved communication, the whole new way.
You know, it's actually funny you say that because I was thinking about that, hadn't thought that in a long time, how the dog connected with me and I connected with the dog very, very, very strongly. But I always felt the dog was intended to connect with somebody else. And the dog, they loved each other, but they didn't connect until we had done what we were supposed to do together. Like, we came to an understanding or something. And then
it taught you how to communicate better. And then it went about its business.
And then they connected, like, yes, absolutely. Funny you say that.
And we've brought it up a number of times with our good friend Esther Bernstein from Sapphire Sanctuary and, yes. and the horse communication. Yes. And then I was really smiling about thinking about Link Link Circus and Isabella Rossellini and the animal communication. There needs to be more of this. So I'm so excited to learn more tonight and have this conversation.
As the world of wellness continues to expand, one fascinating and heart-opening frontier is how energy healing applies to our animals and our animal companions. With 71% of U.S. households sharing their homes, hearts, and healing journeys with cherished animal companions, what if we could also support their emotional and energetic well-being? We have titled this episode How to Support Your Pet's Physical, Emotional, and Energetic Well-Being. This is our episode 876, and our featured interviewed guest is accomplished animal communicator, TEDx speaker, educator, author, and founder of Communication with All Life University, Joan Ranquette. Welcome to the Life Changes Show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Joan. And thank you for this conversation. It gets deeper and deeper. And it feels like, well, judging from your book, it feels like the world must be ready to go deep into this.
Absolutely. I feel like, I mean, going back to what I think Mark just said was, you know, the more I feel like my job here on the planet is to make animal communication normal. It's normal.
Okay. Then good, because we are so amazed sometimes, like, oh, it's almost as if she understands me. It's almost as if, you know, so it's not almost as if they do, and maybe even far beyond, right?
100%. Yeah. Of
Tell
course they
more.
Do. well, because the thing that we have to understand is that we're all broadcasting pictures, words, and feelings, right? And that's how telepathy works, is the transference of pictures, words, and feelings. And it isn't a one-way street. So in addition to teaching animal communication, I take people on wildlife trips. And, you know, you can just see when the whole herd of zebra can sense that they smell, they know something happened, and they all react within 1 minute. And it's not like anybody had a big, you know, megaphone. They just all, it was in the field of energy. So one said, uh-oh, and they all went, let's go. And that's how fast telepathy works. So in our house, if you're thinking, oh, I'd like to go on a dog W-A-L-K, and I'm spelling it because God knows we could have three dogs jumping up from a sleep right now. Then they've already gotten the picture. They may have been sending you the picture. That idea that you think it's your idea is even funnier, because half the time they're like, hey, what if we did this? What if we did that? So they're very, it's always happening. And I always say that they're like first responders in our world. They know what's going on, and they can make a choice to entertain us if they feel we're down, or come lick our tears, or get us out of the house, or feel badly with us, you know? So they definitely, and we are responding to them all the time, even though we think we're so brilliant.
Okay. All right. The dogs that walk into that room of like many people just sitting and seem to go directly to one person, it almost seems unreal, uncanny. What kind of hocus pocus is that?
Well, I feel like, you know, Just like, was it you that wrote that book
The
about the
Little Dog That
dog?
Could. Yes, that was me.
Yeah. I think you and I and Tess Cacciatore had a conversation about it. Because
Yes.
that dog wasn't supposed to be your dog, but it was supposed to be, it was, like you said, you had to have an experience with it. But the real family, you were the conduit to the real family. So that place just set up like, oh, go meet your soul family. And of course they're going to know who it is. And you know, there's just like with humans, we have a million contracts of like, oh, I'm here to lift you up. I'm here to make you happy. I'm here to entertain you. I'm here to have fun with you. I'm here to heal you. You're here to heal me. You're here to entertain me. You're here to, you know, it's like a son or a daughter or a lover or a, you know, it's like any deep relationship that, you know, we've got contracts with these animals and they have more of an instinct about finding out how to go about that than we do. That's why people say, well, I went into the shelter and this dog picked me, or this horse picked me. Speaking of horses picking me, I have a horse here named Pegasus that I got from your friend Esther. And Esther delivered him. And it was obvious he was grieving his past situation, but he also knew I was family. And that was that. He got off that trailer and he was safe. He was home.
It's interesting you say that. I love that. Because one of the questions you asked in the book really, really hit me. Like, I don't know how many people think about some of the things you invite people to think in the book. And that was, how many people have come and gone in this animal's life
Yeah.
that they've gotten attached to, or maybe gotten abused from, or I mean, wow. So they come with all of whatever they come with.
Yeah, and in that question, it's, you know, it's, I like to say that we have to be the emotional leader. You know, we get they need that leadership in the same way that in the herd of zebra or wildebeest, there's some leader that's saying, we're going over here, we're going away from danger. And that's kind of our main job, because all beings, even a blade of grass, wants safety, wants to know it's got space to thrive. And so it's our job to create that. And then the relationship can blossom into whatever else it is. But it's like our first step is just like creating that sense of safety so that they can unwind from multiple households or multiple heartbreaks or things like that. And it doesn't have to affect the relationship it's they're having with you.
So when I first saw the book, your book, your latest book, Animal Chakra Healing, Bringing Balance, Health, and Joy to Our Animal Companions, one of the things that my mind thought was, okay, she's not talking about us actually healing our own pets. Hopefully she's talking about her doing it, but no, you are talking about how we can help. But my thought went to, so many people don't have their chakras healed or don't even know that they have a chakra. So how can they heal their animal?
Well, if the book is kind of a gallop through chakras for, you know, I talk a little bit about human chakras and animal chakras, and I always say that, you know, the chakra system for animals is like a cheat sheet for animal communication. It's going to, you know, looking at it as a map of the system is a great way to then starting to deepen your own appreciation for yourself. I have people in some of my classes that are say, I went to India to study chakras when I was in my yoga teacher training, and I didn't understand it like I did until I read your book. And it's because when we look at it from the animal standpoint, it's almost more primal, and the complications can only be human. Right. So if we're looking at, like, just take the first chakra, for example, the root chakra that for us, right now, if you're sitting on it, and it's your legs, and it's your sense of being grounded and security and family and original family and the belief systems and justice and all these things that are in that. And we can see it play out so perfectly with animals. I mean, they have a sense of what's theirs out in the wild, and they're gonna protect their territory, and they're gonna protect their herd, and they're going to use that root chakra, that first chakra, to get the heck out of there by powering off those hind legs. So it's so primal and simple with animals, and yet we can complicate it in a big way.
Well, and that was this probably the second or third thing that came to mind was animals are probably more clear than we are because we complicate things. And sometimes we'll hear animal communicators say, well, the problem wasn't the animal, it was the human. So, but obviously they can have their own experiences out in the wild or out in the street that will affect. Please speak to that if you would, please.
Well, they can even have their own experience in our homes that isn't necessarily connected to us, right? Like they are their own beings with their own karma, their own wounding, their own healing, their own trajectory toward, full agency and evolving. So, or their soul's evolution. We can see that out in the wild, but we can also see it in our homes. And in our homes, we often are so myopic and see animals as some extension of us, and then we really miss the whole picture. And then that comes into that whole idea that it really was the person either missing it or projecting onto the animal and by needing it to be about them.
Joan, when I look at past generations and how hard they worked at certain tasks and how much they had to do that definitely didn't allow them time to think along the lines of the conversations that we're having today, and certainly didn't have social media or what have you, and all these books like yours. So we are at a place where we have these conversations, and I think they're great. Now, if during that same time, dogs were outside, for example, they weren't in the house. So are dogs evolving also? Or are they evolving because they're in the house or because they're on the beds? And therefore, these conversations become more important for them too?
Well, I mean, it's funny because years ago, I remember I got hired to be the keynote speaker at the Greeley Farm Show in Colorado. I was like, what the heck? I mean, it's a great paycheck, but I doubt anybody's going to show up, right? And boy, was I shocked because I walked in and I had enough handouts for 100 people. Well, there were almost 200 people there. And it was because a lot of people, farmers and whatnot, they know the value, their productivity, their lives were completely dependent on animals, and that relationship, that working relationship, had to be solid. And it was in about probably, I don't know, the 13 or 1400s that at one point disease in Europe just knocked a lot of animals out, but the royal families were able to keep animals. And then they realized how much it brought to the mental health of their people. And so they started allowing people to keep pets. And they started understanding the value of smaller animals so that people had these companions. So I mean, sure, there were a lot of people that left their dogs out in the backyard, but there were plenty of people that also snuck that dog in, or snuck that cat in, and recognized the family aspect. But I think that those dogs, that's what they knew to do, the people that left their dogs outside. And they didn't love them any less just because they left them outside. It was just that was what you did, you know? We don't know until we know better to do something differently.
Okay, so today we're going to get to know better. Animal chakra healing. So this is a whole system, which makes sense to me because physiologically and biologically we have these nodes, etc., in our body, and makes sense that animals would have them too. Tell us a little bit about them in regard to animals.
So if you look at the first chakra, which, like I said, is their hind legs and at the base of their tail, if you were to look at animals who are timid or are reactive, often they'll have a very tight, the muscles in this area are very tight because in either case, they're going to react, right? The timid dog is going to back up, the reactive dog is going to lunge forward. And so it's a very interesting phenomenon. And I have one of my horses used to be very spooky. She would get scared of everything. So the minute I got in the saddle, I always placed my hand right. I would, lean back, put my right hand right over her tail, and I would say to her, I've got this. I've got this. We're safe. And she stopped spooking within about 3 months of me having her. And she was like terrible. Like she was famous for, dumping riders. So it's that zone of safety is really important. And so for people that have these animals that fall into either kind of extreme category, that's a really great place to be massaging. And often those are the animals that come up and say, can you scratch my butt? So it's an interesting thing. And then the second chakra is right over the sacral chakra is right over the hips. And like for humans, it's fertility, it's creativity. And fertility doesn't have to necessarily mean, cooking a baby. It could be cooking an idea, developing a relationship. It's transactional. It's very much like with humans, the one-on-one relationships. And it's a power center for them. And then the third chakra is just like for us, self-esteem, confidence. It can also be the home of anxiety, which can be an emotional or physiological phenomenon, just like with humans. And so sometimes if you have an animal that has anxiety, like especially separation anxiety, which can be a second and third chakra phenomenon, it's cool to do almost like a little figure eight massage over the hips. And then around over the mid back, and then back around the hips and over. You can kind of just connect them up with themselves again and help them feel like, they could self-soothe, they can take care of themselves. And then the heart chakra, like for us, is just a beautiful, wonderful place where we can open and be open and receive. But it's also where joy and grief sit next to each other with the heart and the lungs in traditional Chinese medicine. But when we look at animals, they are able to like be grieving 1 minute, and then you say, let's go outside, and they can connect up with their natural curiosity and seeking and be very present for a moment, and then they can go back to their grief. But they seem to manage it in a way that we could take a page from their handbook for sure. And then the fifth chakra, for us, it's the voice, the spoken expression. But for them, it's even the unspoken expression. It could be their body language. It's how they position themselves among other animals. So it's very similar to us. And then the sixth chakra is the instinct or the intuition, and in the third eye area. If you look at how many animals have echolocation, like dolphins and bats and whales, like that's a really developed third eye, and we kind of missed the boat. So I get a little jealous on that. And then on the crown chakra, just like for us, it's the connection to the divine. And whether or not they have a consciousness about their spirituality doesn't matter, but it becomes for us to be the agent of bringing trust back for them. Because a lot of times you'll see animals that are head shy, and that's an indicator that they aren't trusting. And so we want to restore their faith in the world through that chakra. So that's just a little brief overview.
Yes, and actually, so when I asked the question, I said, we can understand that from physiology and biology. What we can't necessarily, I don't think, understand from physiology and biology is the eighth chakra. Tell us about that.
Well, in yoga world, you know, we've always, a lot of people have understood the eighth chakra to be the auric field. And with animals, they also have a field of energy, and it is their communication system. Like, they feel things in their field, so do we, but we just don't recognize it before we feel it or know it in our body or our mind. And so, like that herd of zebra that sense the danger, they move collectively because they know safety in numbers. And so they stay in that field of energy, connected like a morphic resonance.
Wow. And potentially that's the one where the dogs find people or
100%. That's just, they're sensing into it like, whoops, that's them. I know them. I'm with them.
There it is. You know, I was really also taken, well, first of all, I was taken by how deep you go into all of this. Thank you for giving us such a brief overview, but you go so deep. Again, I have to say, the book is Animal Chakra Healing, and bringing balance, health, and joy to our animal companions. So yes, I could connect with the truism of your friend having gone to India and then coming and understanding the chakras thanks to your book. You go so deep. So I don't know if I think is one of the first to go this deep for animals.
I think so, because I was really lucky that in the 90s when I first started doing animal communication, I was I was studying with Carolyn Mace, and so I understood. I mean, her book Anatomy of the Spirit just like blew my mind open. And then that was like 94, 95. I remember 96 listening to it on cassette tape, driving to go ride my horse at like 6 a.m. and, you know, going over Los Feliz and landing in the valley. So I was like talking to animals at that point for a living. And I thought, how does this connect with animals? So it became a lifelong study, and I got to apply it with Dr. Valerie Hunt, who created the scalar wave, which is a technique that I teach. But she was a UCLA biologist who was then hired to make the first aura machine, and she did. And I was part of her studies on the chakras with the fact-finding mission I was on about animals. So I got this taste of it, and then practical application. And so I've been, just formulating stories and case studies as if I were still in some research for somebody, but because it's so interesting.
It's fascinating. And I tell you, not even having read the whole book yet, as I skimmed it, there were some questions where you really took me into interesting places, and two in particular, or two others, because I've mentioned a couple of the others already. But if your animal is in the end of life stages, are you getting them the support they need? And at first blush, I thought, well, that's kind of nice. And then I thought, oh, wait, knowing where I think Joan is taking us in this book, and in your communications, maybe it's not just nice. Maybe it's not only helpful to the animal, but maybe that's part of our soul experience that's supposed to be happening in that eighth chakra that we're supposed to learn and develop something from before the next animal or the next relationship or our next part of life.
100%. I mean, it's that we all get to evolve in this. The animal is going to go through the veil and be in whatever next life, whatever it is that you believe in, whether it's a, matriculating onto a next life as a cow, or maybe you believe in heaven, whatever it is, you're part of their labor into that next thing. And it also is preparing you for that level of stewardship to bring in your next friend.
One of the others was, is there a job I could give the animal that would help them to feel as though they have purpose? Talk to us about that, please.
Well, it's funny, the horse Pegasus that I got from Esta, I had a horse that was older. I mean, old. She was 36, and I needed I and my other horse, the one that was Spooky, became her guardian. And I knew that when the older horse died, Anya, the guardian, was gonna have no job. And so, and I knew that I was not prepared to lose two horses, one to old age and one to grief. And so I said, I happened to have Esther over here to do for a Facebook Live I was doing. And she showed me a picture of this horse. She goes, "Do you know anyone that wants him?" And I said, "I do." And so the next thing you know, we prepare to get him here. And so he was there with my. He became the companion to the other horse, the older horse, which freed up some space for Anya. And now his purpose is being Anya's companion and my trail horse. But it's like it's like really helping him recognize all the things that he gets to be so that he could have an easy integration into this new family. Because I have one guy that was kind of a bully. And so it was, beefing up his purpose, so to speak, was would then help all of it, help him have confidence, help the bully horse see, like, oh yeah, he does belong here. I can back off, and then just giving him a purpose because he was in such grief.
Wow, this is really obviously it sounds helpful to you and to the other animals, but this is having that purpose is that important to them?
They all have a purpose, whether they're in a wolf pack up in Yellowstone or in a lion pride out in Zimbabwe or in a pod of dolphins. Everybody has their place. One might be the social butterfly. One might be the curmudgeon. One might, everybody has their purpose.
I'm not even going to ask what the purpose of the curmudgeon is. Throughout the book, as you speak about the chakras, as we come to a close here, it would be really great. You've already given so much food for thought. It'd be great to have some techniques or visualizations or something we can do to start with supporting our dogs. You mentioned massage on the back kind of thing, but is there something we can do from our chair while they're in the room or something?
Yeah, I mean, even just when they come over to you, or just imagining, really grounding them is probably the most important thing you can do, like getting them into rest and digest versus fight or flight. And one really amazing way to do that is to go stroke from the top of their head all the way down their back to the end of their tail 3 times, and then from the top of their head all the way down to one hind leg down to the outside toe 3 times, and then doing that same thing to the other leg 3 times, and really just connecting them up from front to back and helping them feel grounded and in purpose.
I'm starting to feel relaxed just visualizing that.
Yeah, it's a great thing.
This is a great thing. Joan, thank you so much. Again, animal chakra healing, bringing balance, health, and joy to our animal companions. Joan Ranquette, Ranquette. And of course, she's all over social media, YouTube, etc. But Joan, J A JoannRanquette.com is her Facebook page, and Joan Ranquette Communication with All Life on Facebook, Joan Ranquette on Instagram. Find her and enjoy learning from her and her book. Thank you, Joan. This has been wonderful.
Well, and thank you for such a great, deep, and curious conversation.
Ah, good. And looking forward to more with you and animals.
Yes.
All the best to you until next time.
Thank you.
Ciao,
you
too. Joan. Well, this is exciting to me because so much of, actually in the book, Little Dog That Could, Dorothy said, this is what this connection with the dog is about, et cetera, et cetera. And it's been confirmed by others. So what I'm saying is I was the one that was not open at the time to this. And how many of us are out there?
No kidding.
How many of us are out there? Less as of today, thanks to these conversations.
In fact, I think maybe now after 17 and a half or 17 years, we're ready for our first animal guest.
You know, actually, in a way, maybe we've already had them because, like, Joan brought in so many animal examples.
Yes. No, I understand that. And yes, that's why I referenced the on the way to this show experiences that we've had. So it's I think it's an intelligence and a connectedness that we're going to continue to unfold.
You know, although in our future live in person setting would be great to have Joan and have her have an animal with us, and we can.
So now you're agreeing with
me. Now I am agreeing with you. And it's, yes, you know, and we can say.
You got ready for this quicker than you did last time.
I'm ready. I have, you know, asked the animal, so what do you think of this audience, huh? Oh, the fun we could have if we just believe and tune in. And with that, it's time for our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Jamie, and I desperately need help. My husband left me for the fourth time, and I am totally devastated. I love him and cannot imagine life without him. I don't even care that he hasn't worked more than a few weeks since we married 4 years ago. I've not been able to function properly now that he has been gone for a week. I know it's not right, but I have been drinking every day until I throw up. Please help me get him back so I can sober up and start earning money again.
Dearest Jamie, I'm really glad you reached out. I can hear how much pain you're in, and it makes sense that you feel shattered right now. What you're describing, repeated leaving and your body and mind unraveling in response, is deeply traumatic. Anyone in your position would feel desperate to make it stop. Being left, especially repeatedly, can feel like your ground has disappeared. You are not weak for feeling this way, and you are not broken. The most important first step is for you to remember that your safety matters more than anything else. Drinking every day until you throw up is your nervous system screaming for relief. It is not a solution, and it can quickly become dangerous. You deserve help and support right now, and you need to put yourself first. You say you love him, even though he has left you four times. So I have to ask you, Jamie, do you love yourself? Are you willing to get the help you need to stop drinking so you can look at your situation with a clear mind? It is so important for you to love yourself first and foremost all of the time. Unfortunately, many have been programmed to believe that if we forgive the one we love, all will be well. However, if we continue to forgive over and over and over again for negative behavior, this is an indication that we are not loving ourselves. I'm sharing this with you from a place of having created a similar situation with my ex-husband. Even 20 years after divorcing him for the second time, I was angry and drinking to numb my pain, and several counselors told me that I needed to forgive him to be able to close the door on that part of my life, and that only this would help me end my pain and suffering. I thank God that a very powerful minister had a different and life-changing opinion. He shared that the truth was that I needed to forgive myself for putting up with his consistent infidelity, his emotional abuse, and his total lack of respect. He had been able to convince me over and over and over again that he loved me. However, with the help of the minister, I was able to finally understand that my ex-husband didn't love me at all. Even more importantly, this man helped me understand that to look outside of ourselves for love is futile. In order to live a happy and fulfilled life, we must first be able to love ourselves to make the most elegant choices possible. So please, precious Jamie, let's do the work desperately needed for you to determine what loving you would truly be. I'm happy to assist you with this. One of the first steps that helped me love myself and heal my heart was reading Louise Hay's life-changing book, You Can Heal Your Life. Another powerful book is Why You Are Your Ultimate Relationship by Ron Livy. I encourage you to start your healing process with these two books, and I'm also available for one-on-one sessions, so please let me know if you'd like to have me further assist you in developing a deep and life-changing love for Jamie.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at AskDorothy@LifeChangesShow.com.
And for our performance segment, we have Trinidadian steel drummer, composer, singer, instrumentalist, and so much more. We're going to touch on some of that so much more. Emil Spiceman Board, welcome to the Life Changes Show.
Hey, thanks for having me. How are you doing?
Emil, it's a pleasure. We have to, right off the top, thank Scotty Gold for introducing us to you through Grand Rising.
That's right.
Grand Rising, when we were all together at Club Joyful, and yes. Joyful it was, and so much more. And
correct.
So speaking of thanking for introducing, when I started speaking with you about you coming on the show, you started introducing me to stories and history, things that I didn't know, and I was fascinated. I wish we could have that whole conversation on the show. We can't. We'll try and get to as many parts of it, but let me tell you, it had an impact on me. And so please share, as I know you like to, and I'm glad that you are doing, a bit of the history of your favorite instrument. Mm-hmm. Or I'm assuming it's your favorite instrument, actually. Is it?
Well, you know, I fell in love with the bass. That's my first love. I actually started on piano as a kid, 7 years old.
Wow.
I thought the piano was too girlish. You know?
Okay.
So I motivated myself towards the guitar and the bass. And the bass the bass had everybody dancing. So I just loved that instrument. But then when the family migrated to the US in 77, I found my dad's big band. He had a steel drum, all orchestra, steel drum, 25 pieces. And I found that that was the instrument that everybody was paying attention to in the US. They were like, what is that? What is that new thing? How does it make those notes? So can I demonstrate a little bit of it for you?
Sure.
This is what it sounded like back in. Thank you. songs.
I know now.
Yes, all the songs, and you know, that was the instrument that got the attention of the American public. So I sort of migrated over to the instrument, and I stayed there for some reason for 40 years.
Well, we're glad you're still there. And actually, so give us a quick couple minutes of when did this and how did this instrument start in Trinidad?
Well, after the World War, you know, we were just celebrating, and you know, one of our percussionists, I guess, found that if you banged on certain cans, you can get different pitches, different notes. So they experimented, and they kept doing the experiment and kill all types of paint cans, you know, biscuit tins, anything with metal in it, pots and that sort of thing. And eventually they came up with 5 notes on one can. Then when the war started, we were trading oil with the US. So we ended up with a 55-gallon oil drum, and we made a full 30 notes on the big drum, and it just evolved from there. And right now it's like a musical fantasy. Everybody's playing it all around the world. You go to Switzerland, France, Japan, China, you know, it's everywhere. France, you name it.
Well, before we get to hear, that actually sounded really good. And I know you don't have your studio set up because of the damage you had because of the rains and all of that. So thanks for doing that. It sounded great, but we're going to get to hear a pre-recorded piece shortly. But before we get into that, you said it's everywhere. Well, how did it get everywhere? You said there was a champion for the instrument, obviously your dad, and in collaboration with?
Liberace. Yes, the showman himself, America's number one. What happened was there was the Montreal Exposition in Canada, 1967. And that year, my dad's band was one of the best bands in Trinidad and Tobago at the time. So they were selected to perform at the exposition. And they did several shows a day on the stage that was surrounded by the rivers of the Saint Lawrence. And you know, Liberace heard them there, and he decided they were the hit of the fair that year, and he decided he would have them open for him on his following tour, which they did. They came to the US and toured with Liberace for 2.5 years, one of the longest touring acts. He took them on a 40-state tour, which included the Ed Sullivan Show, Mike Douglas, David Frost. He took them everywhere, Las Vegas. You know, they did all the country clubs and, you know, you name it, they did it. Radio City Music Hall, the Broadmoor, Colorado Springs, the Waldorf, you know, they did it all, you know. Liberace opened the door for them.
It is fascinating. And I know that you are passionate about this story. And of course, it features your father, that you have created a documentary about it, and I've seen clips, and I hope it becomes full-fledged someday.
Well, a lot of people don't know that the steel drum was actually introduced to America in the best way by Liberace, and it wouldn't be where it is right now hadn't it been for his work. So my dedication, I did a documentary, a docudrama video, which I think is a nice give back, and it's education for the younger generation that don't even know who Frank Sinatra is. So, you know, if we have to get them involved with our culture and our history, we got to show them the things that actually would appeal to them. And well, I think this does.
Speaking of the younger generation, is it a festival or something, or a competition that happens every year in Trinidad where people come from all over and the kids get involved in learning the steel drum and competing?
Every year we have a carnival. In fact, our carnival is supposedly one of the biggest, if not the largest, most influential carnival in the world, because it's being duplicated right here in Los Angeles, in New York City, Labor Day, Montreal, Toronto, London. Everywhere is having a Trinidad and Tobago type carnival. Wow. With the steel drums in the street, masquerading, carnival costumes, the whole works, you know, so it's very popular. So every year we have the carnival, And we used to have a music festival where you would have classical music being presented at the same time of year. But we sort of slighted, we cut that one out. And I think we should bring it back because most people think the steel drums will only play dance music. But we do all the classical masterpieces, Chopin, Cacheterian, Strauss, Mozart, all of it. It's all recorded already. A lot of it has been recorded.
Well, actually, let's talk a little bit more about that after we've gotten to hear one of your pieces. I think we want to hear Love Is Everywhere first. So is there anything you want to share about the song? It does speak for itself.
Love Is Everywhere is one of those songs that speaks about just at that point where you. This is what caused me. I wrote it because I felt that just at that point where you want to give up. I can't stand this. All this, and all of a sudden someone comes into your life, and you hit it off, and everything just sinks. It clicks. And you realize that with love, everything is okay. Everything seems right. When you're working from love and you're working with love all around you, you just can't escape it. It just follows you. So love is very important. And that's why I wrote that song, to remind people that love is not in one place. It's everywhere. You open your eyes. The sun, the light, the air, the everything, it's loving you, and if you just accept it and just be with it, you'll feel it and you'll enjoy it. You'll smile.
Well, I'm smiling right now. Let's enjoy this. This is a pre-recorded song by our guest, and it is Love Is Everywhere, Emil Spiceman Board, here on the Life Changes Show.
This one features my family.
Oh, yes, and we'll talk about them when we come back. Absolutely.
These are my brothers and sisters.
Nice.
Do it! Do it! Praises to the Most High God that is everywhere and in all things good. Praises to the Most High God that is love. Love is there for you and me.
Love is everywhere.
That's right. Yeah. Well, it's here on the show.
It's here on the show for sure. Emil Spiceman Bord is on the show. Find him at his website, theemilbord.com, and the emilbord.com. He's on Facebook at emil.bord. Bord, B-O-R-D-E. Also, we have a link to some of his videos, or to at least one, but you could find many more, obviously, on YouTube and at theemilbord.com. Emil, you mentioned your family, and I definitely wanted to talk about them. You did mention your father, and there are more of you. Share with us. And we got to hear them, actually.
Well, when we moved up here in 77, my dad was still playing with a few members of the original band, like maybe about 12 of them. And I tried to join that band. I tried to work with them. And they felt I was too young. I was too green.
Oh.
So I decided to start the family band, the family version. And, you know, before you knew it, we were in Vegas playing our first, you know, shows. We had barely learned 20 songs, and there we were following in my dad's big band's footsteps. And we were all nervous and scared. And oh my God, I was the arranger, the musical director for the group at that time. And man, I almost had heart attacks every performance, you know, because... Yeah, we were playing for new American audiences. My brothers and they were new to the music game, because a couple of my brothers didn't play music ever.
Oh.
And we were waiting to go to college in Michigan, Ann Arbor. So we decided to start this band. And before you know it, 20 years went by.
Wow. How many of you? I think they're all boys and one girl?
Two girls. One of my sisters played drums, trap drums, and one of my sisters was lead vocalist.
Well,
Buzzing Bee. And you know, we all we enjoyed traveling around the U.S. We woke up, we listened to soap operas, you know, in the morning, night, evening we would play shows, and you know, we late nights, and you know, it was a different lifestyle. But that's what we did for 20 years.
Wow.
My mom collected all the money. My dad was the band leader, and we saw America. In fact, I can tell you that I have seen every state in the U.S. except Alaska.
Wow.
Playing those same drums.
Wow.
Yeah.
Why do I think Alaska would love you?
Well, it would, because whale watching up there is very fun, I heard.
Okay.
Plus, we've got a retired judge up there by the name of Ray Funk, and he is the authority on Caribbean music
Wow.
and history right now.
Okay, so I see Alaska in your future then. Let me
Oh, yeah.
did I hear an interesting twist? Did you say your father became the leader of your band?
My father was the leader of the band when we started the family group. He
Wait,
left.
so he left the other band?
He left the other band.
Oh,
He left the other band. Well, that way we could keep the money in the family.
Okay.
Because that was my mother's, that was my, those were my mother's instructions.
Okay.
I remember her saying to my dad at the time, if you don't work with your kids, and I don't have to say the rest, right?
Okay.
She
Actually,
gave him an ultimatum, an offer he couldn't refuse. And we started.
I was going to ask you, and maybe you just answered the question, but I was going to ask you where some of your, well, you've got great energy. You said some great things during our first conversation, our second conversation, our third conversation. And I've been writing down some quotes that I really liked, and I was going to ask you, where does some of this come from? I'll share with you one of the lines. You said, when you find a hole, you
Fill
can complain about it. You know exactly what I'm going to say.
it.
Go ahead, you could finish it.
You find a problem, work on the solution.
Yeah.
Sometimes a problem is just there to teach you how to fix it. And then you become better, stronger, smarter, wiser, and you become a better dad. You can tell your kids how to do it, So
You also said, we were talking, I guess, at the turn of the year, and we're wishing each other a happy new year. And you said, let's make this year our best year, period, just because we can.
Just because we can. Because it's like a fruit on a tree. If you become ripe, when you become too ripe, what happens? You fall off and you get rotten, right? So while we are alive, while we are living, we are just fruits blossoming. So every year should be better. Every year we should be tastier. I should like myself better this year than I liked myself last year. And if I don't, then I'm moving in the wrong direction.
Sharing art is one of the biggest, best things we can do for each other right now.
Oh, and that's I feel like the artist, the musician, the artist, we are the last standing peaceful warriors on the planet. We are not concerned about transactions for every piece of art we create. We are concerned about legacy, which is what attracted me to Grand Rising and Scott's. They were talking about writing music that would be here long after we are gone. And what can be better? What can be a better gift? What can
And
you leave?
uplifting music.
Uplifting, of course,
Yeah.
uplifting. Everything that's being sung isn't music, as far as I'm concerned. It's not always relevant. Sometimes it's there to teach you what not to do. So the fact is, we are able to create a legacy going out, so that when we drop off and we go back to the earth, there's something here for our kids and their kids, and something that can be shared going forward. And I think that's what we need to focus on and get out of this attitude that life sucks and it's not and it's you know we you know I think we are complicating things that are very simple, and the animals understand it, and they are wondering what's wrong with us.
Okay, one more Spice Man ism, I'll call it, and then tell us where you think this comes from. So, let's become more human again.
Well, yeah, because look at where we are right now. everywhere you look, there's a war conversation, manifesting. And why? Why? It's as though they say the devil makes work for idle hands, But if we kept our hands busy, we kept our minds sharp, we kept focusing on, the proper things, the right things, ethics, morals, all the things that we've lost, we'd be all right. We'd be all right. As a matter of fact, I enjoyed the first segment because she spoke about the creatures and the animals, and I feel personally the way we treat animals and the neglect we've had for them is finally touching the human spirit. It's we are doing it to each other now. And we've been practicing on the animals for all these years. And we've got to cut it out. We've got to stop. Because if we lose them, we are gone too. We'll be after that. So treat the animals right, and we'll find that, for some reason we're gonna get more for ourselves again,
So where does all this come from for you? Does it come from your mother? Does it come from your spirituality, your music, your own wisdom you came with? Where does it come from for you? Before we get into the next song.
It's a combination of where I was born and my travels and the fact that we were raised, we were raised. I was fortunate to have both parents in my life, and it makes a difference when you have a father that's your hero, and you have brothers and family that, they're there for rivalry, so you battle with each other, but then you still learn to work together and travel and enjoy life with each other. So once you have it in the family, once you have love and respect in that family unit, now you're prepared to go out into the world and share it. You're not suspicious of everybody out there until they create some stupidity. You trust everyone like you trust your brothers and family. And if they treat you otherwise, well, then you know it's them. You know it's something going on, and you can always escape. You just leave it, just withdraw from that situation, But yeah.
I said that was the last one and we were going to a song, but I can't let this go because you said something with an intention that we don't hear often enough, if ever. You said we were raised.
Yes.
And then you said we were raised. You didn't say with this or in this way. You just said we were raised. So, in other words, it was raising with intention or love or attention or something, but it
Yes.
was intentional on purpose.
It was attention. It was attention, Sometimes the intention wasn't there, but the attention was there. And because we had that attention, we knew that somebody was looking out. You remember when you were a kid and you felt like you were being watched wherever you were when you were alone? That's your inner voice speaking, and your inner voice lives with you all your life. But the older you get, the quieter it becomes, because we are so used to not listening to it. We're listening to everything else, the TV, the internet, what the news is saying, everybody else is complaining about, the funny neighbor, But we have to get to that voice inside us that says, I am calm, I am peaceful, I know that I am loved, and I know I have some value to share. Yeah, it's in there somewhere.
You asked me earlier today when you called, how are you doing? And what did I say to you? I said, I've been listening to your music all day. How could I be doing? I'm great. So, live it up is what we're going to hear now. Anything you want to share about it before we hear it?
Yeah, live it up is just the sentiment of, look, life is passing you by. And if you don't laugh, love, dance, play, smile, and relate with others and enjoy it, you are missing the opportunity that life really is. So live it up, live it up. Stop and smell the roses and enjoy your life. If God was to open up the sky and said, hey, Filippo, how are you? How are you? How was the life I gave you? How's the last 50 years been? What would you say?
I would say I'm not even 50 years old yet.
That's, I'm saying, you know, you would be grateful though, you know?
Yes, of course.
You would be great. How old are you, Filippo?
I'm over 50.
You're teasing me. You know, I just realized I am actually the same age Liberace was when he died.
Oh, wow.
You know?
Wow.
Yeah,
Interesting.
he was 68.
Well, thankfully, you have many, many, many more years of living it up and of sharing your wisdom and your music. And you know what? I have a new phrase. Stop, and smell the spice, says the Spice Man. Here is Emil Spice Man Bord and his song Live It Up. It's pre-recorded. Is your whole family on this too?
Yes.
Ah,
In
wonderful.
fact, it's a combination of my family and my group, Tropical Connection, which is a Detroit-based funk fusion group. So we blended both groups for this particular piece.
And we'll enjoy it here on the Life Changes show right now.
Yes. Lift it up.
I would love to share with those who would be willing to live.
Hey, wow. You know, this feels like it could be a theme song for Life Changes. Life Changes, live it up. Man, let's live it up.
I would enjoy that.
This sure. is your life. Slow it down. Do it right.
That's right. That's right.
Emile Spiceman Board. And again, you can find him at The Emile Board. The Emile, E-M-I-L-E, board, BORDE.com. He's on YouTube. He's on Facebook. Find him. We have the links at the Life Changes page for Emile Board. Emile, what a pleasure it has been. We look forward to more.
Well, I got to let you know where you can find me, another place you can find me.
Where else?
There's a new movie we just shot in St. Kitts, the Nevis. We just did that a couple months back.
Oh, tell me more. Oh, you're muted. Oh, Emile, there you go.
There we go. Yes, there's a movie, the premiere coming up in Los Angeles. I'll give you some details later on. But right now it's called The Pan Girl. It's about the first girls, women that played Pan. And it's a short story, but it was nominated. It was accepted, actually, at the Pan-African Film Festival. And directed by Julia Jeffers, a good friend of mine. And I was so happy to be asked to be consultant on that, movie for the Steel Drum Affairs. So that's coming out. That's definitely out there on the way. You'll see some. In fact, I'm acting in that also. I'm an actor, music consultant, player.
Of course you are. and actually more, but we won't get into it now because we have to bring the show to a close. But hopefully we'll have more to talk about. Not hopefully, we will have more to talk about as we go. But do send us information on that. And if it's something that we could share with our audience, we are happy to. In the meantime, we've been delighted to be here together with you.
Filippo, I can't thank you enough for doing this because you're doing something that the world, the public needs right now. It's too much negativity out there. And this is positive, and I commend you for it. And keep up the good work because it's important. Thank you.
Well, thank you for that. And the thanks goes out to our whole team here at our whole family here at the Life Changer Show.
For sure.
Emile, a big thank you to you again. Emile Board, what a pleasure it has been. And it was a pleasure having our interview guest, Joan Ranquette, on the show. With our thanks, that is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark Lejeur, I am Filippo Voltaggio, and along with our whole family here at the Life Changes Show, we remind you that as your life changes, like it surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com. On Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.